How apropos for the upcoming holiday. Oh, really? You did it. Excellent. Amen. So what I wanted to do with you tonight, the evening before Thanksgiving, is to try to understand Thanksgiving from a Jewish perspective and whether or not there may be any possible issues or problems for a Jew to celebrate Thanksgiving. Now, even before we get into this, I'd just like to hear, I'm not going to get into a whole discussion, I just want to throw them out there. What possible problems could there be from a Torah perspective to celebrate this wonderful holiday? Potentially.
Maybe a holiday originated with a religious celebration.
Okay, good. One possibility is a holiday maybe originated within some kind of religious, and what's the problem with that? What's wrong with that?
I mean, yeah.
Okay, because it could be what kind of religion? It could be what?
Christian religion.
Okay, what's the problem with the Christian? Keep going. What's the problem with Christianity? There could be issues of what's referred to in Hebrew as Avodah Zarah, which is a very broad term referring to paganism. Even though Christianity prides itself on pulling the world away from paganism, there are certain aspects of Christianity that pose serious theological problems for the Jew. Yes?
I guess some of the other problems would be the icons involved with Thanksgiving, such as pilgrims, turkey, being considered almost idolatry to some extent.
Turkey. The country, Turkey, or the animal?
The animal, I mean, you're saying because it was hat, things like that.
Because the pilgrims were religious? Or because...
To some extent, and they're icons you associate with the holiday that could, by extension, be considered idolatry.
Kind of. Okay,
I was going to say just that it's not on the Sabbath. It's just on a Wednesday.
It's during the week.
Yeah, it's not really like, you know.
It's not conflicting with any other Jewish holiday. It's usually, it's always celebrated on Thursdays. What other possible issue do you think you could have with it?
It conflicts with Sukkot.
How does it conflict?
Sukkot is for our Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's interesting. In other words, we already have holidays where we offer thanks to God. So isn't this kind of... But this is a particular thanks. And maybe we could figure out a Thanksgiving that this is expressing a certain gratitude for things that we're not thanking God for on Sukkot. But the truth is, it's a general day of Thanksgiving. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Anything else you can come up with? I mean, I think you hit the main issues.
I have a question.
Is turkey kosher? Turkey is kosher. So that's not a problem. It's actually brought up in the sources. You'll see in a
mostly
minute.
Mostly because we don't know that it's not kosher.
Can you define...
Thanksgiving? Paganism, forget the word paganism.
Okay.
The question is, in Hebrew it's referred to as Avodah Zarah, worshipping a foreign god.
Lo Avodat Elilim?
It's Oto Davar.
Oh, okay.
It's a synonym for Avodat Elilim, Avodah Zarah. These are all different references for worshipping idols, which doesn't only refer to worshipping an idol. If Jesus is worshipped as a god, and not merely seen as he is, as the Messiah, okay? And it depends on the denominational... I'm sorry?
Did you just say Jesus?
As a Messiah. He's seen. But he's not only seen as a Messiah by many Christians. Many Christians believe that he was also God's son, and God, and he has a divinity to him, and he's therefore worshipped as a god. And therefore, if Thanksgiving was established by Christians to offer Thanksgiving to who? To Jesus, then obviously that would pose a problem for Jews who do not believe in Jesus, right? That would be an issue. So with that in mind, let's open up our handout here and let's first understand what is Thanksgiving. Before you analyze any halachic issue according to Jewish law, you first have to get what's called in Hebrew the mitzias. What's a mitzias? If you want to know if a certain medical procedure is in violation of Torah law, you have to first study the medical procedure. If you want to know if a certain behavior or practice that is happening in American culture, you have to first have to understand what it is. Okay? So, very interesting introduction on top. Follow with me. Let's actually, I want to include everybody here. We're each going to take a paragraph, and each of us is going to read. Okay, it's in English, so shouldn't be a problem. just for our Hebrew teacher, that's all. So, just read loudly and clearly. Be proud of your paragraph. I'm going to start off. Introduction. Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday. It is no longer, and perhaps never was, a celebration affiliated with any particular religion or faith, although some in America celebrate with religious ceremonies. On a social level, it is celebrated by Americans of a broad variety of religious backgrounds. This article discusses the halachic issues. Halacha is, of course, Jewish law. Issues related to the different forms of celebrating Thanksgiving that one witnesses in America currently. In particular, this article will focus on whether the holiday of Thanksgiving is essentially a religious holiday, a secular holiday, or an ambiguous one. And that's going to make a big difference.
Okay.
Go on, the history.
Okay. The history of American Thanksgiving. Before any halachic analysis can be done, it is necessary to place the observance of the holiday of Thanksgiving in America in the proper historical context. The first Thanksgiving Day celebration was held in...
I think we should have like some American music playing in the background.
Here we go.
Glory, glory. Okay, I'm sorry.
The first Thanksgiving Day celebration was held in response to the survival by the pilgrims of the particularly harsh winter of 1623. Not only did the colonists themselves celebrate, but food was sufficiently plenty that even the Indians with whom the colonists were at peace were invited. This celebration took place on July 30th, 1623, in the middle of the summer. Similar such celebrations occurred throughout the New England area throughout the 1600s. However, they were only local rather than national or even regional celebrations of Thanksgiving, and only to mark the end of a particularly difficult winter until 1789.
Okay, good. So it actually began very localized, 1622. This is way before this great country was... was declared, was created, and it began as what? Basically to thank, as a day of Thanksgiving, that these pilgrims had food. And they had food was sufficiently plenty, that even the Indians with whom the colonists were at peace were invited. And that's how it actually began. But nothing happened until 1789. It was just people here and there. And then even in 1799, you'll see. Let's continue.
I bet you I'm going to get all the difficult words.
So you are, but I'll help you out.
Good. In 1789, Congressman Elias...
it's like a French sounding.
Whatever. ...of New Jersey proposed in Congress a resolution urging President Washington to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of the Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity to establish a constitution of government for their safety and happiness.
Good. Good job. Impressive. We'll move on.
Yeah. After quite a debate, President Washington issued the first National Thanksgiving Proclamation, setting November 26, 1789, as Thanksgiving and a national holiday. Washington stated in his proclamation...
It's a beautiful proclamation, by the way. Just pay attention. It's very interesting. Mm.
Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil...
Top of the next page, page 3.
And religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us.
Okay, good. So President Washington, what was his proclamation about? He recommended, okay, it didn't become law. The President of the United States cannot create law himself, right, or herself, we'll see. Thursday the 26th of November should be a day that's devoted to servicing God. Right? He says the great and glorious being who is a beneficent offer, because why? We want to give him our sincere and humble thanks for protecting us and for giving us this great nation, for his providence, for the union and the plenty that we've enjoyed, the liberty that we have, the civil and religious liberty that we're blessed with. It's really Thanksgiving. I don't know how many of you have been to it's the oldest synagogue in the United States in Rhode Island, the Touro Synagogue. By show of hands, how many of you guys have been there? It's unbelievable. You should take a trip to Rhode Island just to go to the synagogue, because in the back of the synagogue, I actually had an opportunity. I married a couple in the synagogue. It was so beautiful, except it was hot and there's no air conditioning because it's really old. But it was in August. In the back of the synagogue is a beautiful letter that's framed, written by George Washington, who davened three times. I'm just kidding. Who actually came once to the synagogue when he was the president and prayed there, and he wrote a beautiful letter to the Jewish community in Rhode Island. And this is the way he wrote. He wrote very, very beautifully, and he was a believer, obviously, in God. And Thanksgiving was a way of recognizing and thanking God. Now, he doesn't mention Jesus. He doesn't mention any particular denominational kind of thing. It just is a day to thank the author of mankind. Now, this is interesting. I'm just going to mention this, even though his words... let's continue, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Notwithstanding the religious eloquence of Washington's words, and even perhaps because of their overtly religious theme, Thanksgiving did not become a national holiday. From 1790 until 1863, there were no national celebrations of Thanksgiving. Indeed, while proclamations of thanks were issued by some presidents, all of the presidents for more than the next 70 years chose to ignore the day as a national holiday of Thanksgiving.
See, so it's, you know, ignoring your president is not a... only a recent phenomenon. Okay, it didn't happen. He proposed, he made a proclamation, but it didn't make it into law. It wasn't until 1846. Let's keep going, please.
It was not until 1846 when the unity of the country was again in controversy because of the Missouri Compromise and the problems of slavery that the celebration of Thanksgiving as a national holiday returned to the national agenda. From 1846 to 1863, Mr. Joseph Hale, the editor of Godey's Lady Book, embarked on a campaign to turn Thanksgiving into a national holiday during which workers would not be required to go to work. Her campaign culminated in President Lincoln's Thanksgiving Proclamation of 1863, the first such proclamation of a national Thanksgiving holiday since 1789. Since 1863, Thanksgiving has been celebrated as a national holiday and a day of rest at the end of November, either the fourth or fifth Thursday of the month.
And you'll see that becomes relevant, that it's fixed, right? And it's either the fourth or fifth Thursday of November. But it's also interesting, just from a historic perspective, that it took until President Lincoln's administration, which was, he was, what, the 16th president of the United States? So it went from George Washington to Lincoln, and something actually happened, that it became a day as we know it today. Let's continue.
One might ask why the Jewish law should simply defer to the American law determination, here that Thanksgiving is a secular and not a religious holiday. Once this conclusion is reached, the claim is made little controversy remains. The simple answer is that American law adopts the definition of secular that is clearly religious in the eyes of Jewish law. For example, in Kamak versus Wahi, a court determined that the holiday called Good Friday was a secular holiday. So too, the Supreme Court has ruled that both Christmas and Hanukkah are secular holidays and have secular displays that lack a religious theme. Certainly, Jewish law views neither of them as secular and would not accept American law's definition of secular as binding on adherence of
right, I don't know why that is, but according to American law, technically, Good Friday, Christmas, Hanukkah are referred to as secular days. Now, if they were really secular as far as we're concerned, then this whole issue could be put to rest. If it's a secular day, it doesn't have any religious connotations, there should be no problem for a Jew to observe Thanksgiving. The problem is, just calling it secular doesn't mean anything, because American law also calls Christmas secular, and we understand that to be a religious day. And we wouldn't start observing Christmas because American society considers it a secular day. So... So now we're going to get into the analysis of Thanksgiving. Now we understand what it is. What is it? It's a day of thanking God, or what? How did it actually begin? It began as really a day of thanking God for food when it was a really difficult winter. And then it sort of started taking on in Washington when he made the proclamation. It was a day really of not only thanking God for food, but thanking God for what else? For what?
Victory.
For victory and what else?
Well,
liberty.
Spring.
No. He was talking more about what does Washington say in his proclamation? For the manifold mercies and favorable interpositions of his providence and the conclusion of the late war, because that's what you said a minute ago. That they beat the British. And what else? And the plenty that we have enjoyed since, the peaceable and rational manner in which we've been able to establish constitutions of government. And particularly the national one now lately, the Constitution. I mean, the Thanksgiving was really for religious liberty, which is how the founders of the Constitution also came here, to escape religious persecution. So it went really from, in the 1600s, thanking God for food, to in the late 1700s, thanking God for America, the creation of this great country and its religious liberty, to in President Lincoln's time, where it was finally established as a national holiday, keeping along the same lines. National holiday, fine. Okay, now let's get into the analysis now. Who are we up to?
I'll go.
Go for it.
Halakhic analysis of Thanksgiving. When we review the history of Thanksgiving, it's not necessary to turn to the question of halakhic issues involving the celebration. The first and most significant issue is whether it is permissible to eat a Thanksgiving meal, but the classical foods that American tradition indicates one should eat at this meal: turkey and cranberry sauce. Among the authorities of the previous generation, three different positions have been taken on this topic, and these three positions have each been accepted by various halakhic authorities of the current generation.
Okay, let's go on. Yeah. However.
You.
Me? Yeah. Okay, sorry. However, before these three positions can be understood, a certain background into the nature of the prohibition to imitate Gentile customs must be understood. Tosafot
is one of the great classic commentaries on the Talmud.
Tosafot understands that two distinctly different types of customs are permitted by the prohibition of imitating Gentile customs found in the Leviticus 18. The first is idolatrous customs, and the second is foolish customs found in the Gentile community, even if their origins are not idolatrous. Rabbeinu Nissim and Maharik,
these are two other halachic authorities,
disagree and rule that only customs that have a basis in idolatrous practices are prohibited. Apparently foolish, but secular customs are permissible so long as they have a reasonable explanation and are not immodest. Normative halakha follows the ruling of the Ran and Mahari.
And now you're about to read from the Ramah. The Ramah is the Ashkenazic gloss on the Shulchan Aruch and the Code of Jewish Law that brings down what the halakha is, because we have a debate. Is the prohibition of imitating the Gentiles, which is a biblical prohibition of doing something following in the ways of what's referred to in Hebrew as chukot hagoyim, is that only a prohibition when it relates to something that the Gentile community has created based on idol worship? Or is it anything? Right? It could be very, very broad.
What if there are Jews at that time?
That's a very good question. I don't think it matters. I think it's basically referring to something that's not a Torah institution, and at least the majority of the individuals who institute it are not Jewish.
Rabbi Feldman was saying, he did a talk on Jews in the Wild West a few weeks back, and he mentioned something about the pilgrims, they were telling to the Jews or something. The Jews have been here for a long time.
Yeah, we've been here a while, but we weren't really, at the forefront of these institutions, so they're still considered Gentile customs, even if there were a couple of Jews mixed into the, So the Ramah, let's continue on the top of the next page. Yeah, go ahead.
Practices done as a Gentile custom for law, no reason for it. One suspects that it is an idolatrous practice, or that there is a maintain the idolatrous origins, however, these customs which are practiced for a reason such as position, weighted a special garment to differ him as a doctor, and is that the same is true for any custom done out of an honor or other reason to be permissible.
Right, so the Ramah basically says that this prohibition is limited to what? The prohibition of imitating one's Gentile neighbors is limited to what types of practices? What kind of practices?
Idolatrous.
If it's, it doesn't mean you can say, oh, you can't wear, a guy goes to medical school, a woman goes to medical school, becomes a doctor, and puts on a white coat. That's a Gentile, it's not something mentioned in the Torah for a doctor to wear. So is there a problem wearing it? So he says, no, there would be a problem, possibly, if this prohibition was that broad to include things beyond idolatrous practices. As will be seen later, let's continue.
As will be seen later, there are authorities who favor being strict with the opinion of the Baruch.
The Groz de Vilna Gaon, very great rabbi,
who rules that only times secular customs are permissible is when they have a Jewish origin. According to this approach, secular customs created by Gentiles are prohibited, even when their origins are not religious.
Okay, that's another opinion, and there are those who are strict when it comes to these issues in deference to the opinion of the Vilna Gaon of the Grub, but that's not normative halakha. That's not necessarily the way the sort of the mainstream community follows. Let's continue. Additionally,
and independent of the halakhic obligation to avoid Gentile religious customs, Jewish law forbids a Jew from actually celebrating idolatrous religious events himself. Thus, a Jew may not attend an idolatrous Indian office party or directly facilitate its observance. So, too, a Jew may not attend a birthday party for an idol worshiper if the birthday party includes the worship of idols.
So this actually becomes a big issue when being invited to a Christmas party or a New Year's Eve party or things like that. I'm not saying that this is a blanket prohibition to attend such an event. It really depends on what the nature of the party is. Is it really there to celebrate Christmas, or is it just something? That's why most offices these days call them holiday parties, right? You know, they're not really there to celebrate the birth of Jesus or to celebrate the crucifixion of Jesus or anything like that. It's just the holiday season. So I don't know if that would really pose a problem, but. If the birthday party or the party you're invited to includes worship of idols, then that would certainly be an issue. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to go through three rabbinic approaches, different opinions on Thanksgiving and how this all applies in terms of Thanksgiving. The first approach is taken by a great rabbi who was for many years considered the leading halachic authority perhaps internationally. His name is Rav Moshe Feinstein. He lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He died in 19. I remember this because I was studying in Israel. I went to the funeral in Israel. It was 1986 that he passed away. It was an unbelievable event, unfortunately, because he really had the great respect of all different parts of the Jewish community. There were thousands and thousands of people from all walks of Jewish life that attended the funeral. Yeah.
Before we get into that, you mentioned there's a problem with celebrating New Year's. Is that because?
I'm not exactly sure what New Year's is celebrating. I know that. I don't know. I don't know enough to answer the question.
Okay.
I'm not really sure what New Year's is celebrating. It's certainly not celebrating a Jewish. We have our own New Year's. That's Rosh Hashanah. So to supplant that for our New Year's would be an issue. But I don't know if there are any idolatrous basis for New Year's. I know there is for Christmas, mm-hmm. But I'm not sure for New Year's. If anybody has any,
it's the bris.
Is,
8 days.
Well, is that real? Is that
that's what I've heard from some people.
What? Plus, it's the Christian calendar, so
the Gregorian calendar,
which is
based on
New Year, based on exactly.
Based on what, though?
Based on when supposedly
he was what?
When he was born and.
Well, that's what I have to get a little clarity. I'm not exactly. Is anyone else here aware? Possibly. I'm not really sure. I need to do a little more research. I actually thought he was born, according to the Christian tradition, on New Year's, and that Christmas was celebrating something else. But I could be wrong. I really, I didn't.
Actually, if you want to go historically, he was born in April or May.
In the spring.
Yeah.
They moved
not
into
Christmas.
No.
Greek.
No, that corresponds with actually a Roman pagan holiday.
Which, Christmas or New Year's?
Christmas was a pagan holiday originally.
And New Year's is therefore celebrating what? We don't know. Okay, let's stick with Thanksgiving. We'll do one holiday at a time. Okay, let's continue. Rav Moshe?
Rav Moshe Feinstein has four public...
Speak louder, sorry.
...has four public responses on the issue related to celebrating Thanksgiving, all of which conclude Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday, but a secular one. The first responsum, written in 1953 or 5723, discusses the deliberate scheduling of weddings and the like on religious holidays of other faiths. Rabbi Feinstein states, on the question of celebrating any event on a holiday of Gentiles, if the holiday is based on a religious belief by the Gentiles, such celebrations are prohibited if deliberately scheduled on that day, even without intent. It is prohibited because of Marit Ayin.
Marit Ayin means the way it looks. The way it looks.
Marit Ayin.
Its appearance.
The first day of the year for them, and Thanksgiving is not prohibited according to law, but pious people,
Bali Nefesh, pious people should be strict. So what is he saying? He says over here that if the holiday is based on religious beliefs by the Gentiles, then if such a celebration is prohibited if it's deliberately scheduled on that day. Okay, and what's Maris Ayin? Bar Sayin means the appearance. What is the appearance? Someone will see a person who's clearly Jewish celebrating a holiday that is worshiping, or that is celebrating a different God, right? A different theology, and it'll look as though you are now
participating
in that, and you are subscribing to that, even if you don't. Because a lot of people who might be, let's say, invited to a Christmas party might be sitting around watching other people what they're doing, but it might look as though you're in agreement with what is being said. You are participating in the prayer to that foreign god, so on and so forth. Let's continue.
Rabbi Feinstein reinforces his understanding that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday in Wisconsin, published in 1980, 5741. He states, on the issue of joining with those who think that Thanksgiving is like a holiday to eat a meal, since it is clear that according to their religious law books, this day is not mentioned as a religious holiday, and that one is not obligated in a meal, according to Gentile religious law. And since this is a day of remembrance to citizens of this country, when they came to reside here, either now or earlier, Halakha sees no prohibition in celebrating with a meal or with the eating of turkey. One sees similar to this in Kiddushin 66, that Yanai...
That's the Talmud.
Mm-hmm. That Yanai, the king, made a party after the conquest of Kohlet in the desert, and they ate vegetables as a remembrance.
Okay, so Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying that, in his opinion, Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday, and therefore, according to their religious law books, this day is not mentioned as any kind of religious holiday, that one is obligated to sit and eat turkey with cranberry sauce on the side. And since it's a day of remembrance to citizens of this country when they came here to reside, there therefore is no prohibition in celebrating this meal or eating turkey on this day. You should know that Rav Moshe Feinstein was well known for having tremendous sense of hakarat hatov, of gratitude to the United States of America. He came from Europe, and he was well aware of the terrible experiences that our grandparents and great-grandparents and their parents and grandparents had in Europe, and it was extraordinarily encouraging of a sense of gratitude on behalf of the Jewish community to the United States. And since there's no religious problem here, there was no problem as far as Rav Moshe Feinstein was concerned, except there was one little issue. And that's the next paragraph. I'm going to continue. Take a look. Thank you all. Good reading, guys. Nonetheless, it is prohibited to establish this as an obligation and a religious commandment, a mitzvah, See, that's important. In other words, just because it's okay to participate in doesn't mean you now create it as a Jewish holiday. Okay? Which could very easily come. How would that happen? So he says, remains voluntary celebration. In this manner, without the establishment of obligation or religious commandment, one can celebrate the next year too with a meal. But I think nonetheless it's prohibited to establish a fixed day in the year for the celebration, and it is only in the first year of the event, when Yanai conquered, and then they had the party, and not for permanence. Well, he doesn't want to have permanent. He's nervous about the permanent aspect of Thanksgiving. He says the whole institution is fine. It's great. But if you do it in a specific set time, then it could what? It could be construed as a Jewish holiday. Or, he continues to say, there's also a problem of adding commandments. Even though one can question the source, it still is a real prohibition. There is a prohibition in the Torah. We're not permitted, according to Jewish tradition, to either add a commandment or to subtract a commandment. How many commandments are there, according to Jewish tradition? 613. So if somebody were to say, I'm redefining Judaism, because that one commandment over there really gets under my skin, I'm getting rid of it, we're going to make 612. Or, you know what? The Torah is great, but they really left out this one really important tradition that I think should be incorporated as part of Torah tradition. And they add one. Okay, that is a biblical prohibition to take away or to add. Why do you think that is such a serious prohibition? It has to do with what our topic has been the last couple of weeks here. If you truly believe, what's that? If you really believe that this all comes from God, then you're kind of walking into the kitchen. The chef is cooking this unbelievable stew and he has the instruction sheet on the counter and everything has to be very, very specific. And you walk in there and you take your pen and you go, sorry. Or, you know what, you could put a little more basil in there. You could, you know, put a dash of, right, it's presumptuous. You're coming to God and you're saying, I know you gave us this Torah, but it's really missing something. Or, you know, that's really not so important. That is presuming a greater level of knowledge than any human being could ever possibly possess. And what Moshe Feinstein is concerned about is that he's very into the institution of Thanksgiving, but not that it should be seen or ever construed as a new Jewish holiday or something that should be added to the Torah. Just follow me, we're going to finish up his position. Thus, Rabbi Feinstein appears to rule that Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday, therefore no problem of Gentile holidays while observing it, but he prohibits its ongoing celebration as an obligation on a particular day because he feels that it's a prohibited addition to the Jewish calendar, or it maybe creates a problem of adding commandments. And then this author, this professor who's writing this article, says that while Rabbi Feinstein's objections to adding observances will be discussed later on, it's clear that he sees no problem in Thanksgiving celebration as a Gentile holiday, and he appears to see no problem with eating turkey on that day as a matter of choice, as long as you're not eating it because you feel obliged. I must eat turkey, just like on Rosh Hashanah, I need to hear the shofar, and on Shabbat, I need to light the candles before Shabbat, and I need to take out, you know, and make kiddush on Friday night. He's concerned that it be seen in that sense. And I think it's essentially Moshe Feinstein's position. Let's skip to Rabbi Soloveitchik on the bottom. The approach of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, those of you who've been in my classes have heard me quote him 4 billion times. Those of you who haven't heard me teach about him, Rabbi Soloveitchik was the dean of Yeshiva University for over 40 years. He ordained thousands and thousands of rabbis. He was a huge Talmudic scholar and great philosopher, both in terms of Jewish philosophy and secular philosophy. And he was considered really to be sort of the father of the modern Orthodox movement in America. So he says the following, follow me on the bottom. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik also agreed that Thanksgiving was not a Gentile holiday and ruled that it was permissible to eat turkey on Thanksgiving. Rabbi Herschel Schechter, who by the way was just here last week, Herschel Schechter was, Baruch just walked out, he's Baruch's rabbi at Yeshiva University and he was a student of Rabbi Soloveitchik for many, many years. Herschel Schechter in his intellectual biography of Rabbi Soloveitchik, Nefesh HaRav, writes, quote, it was the opinion of Rabbi Soloveitchik that it was permissible to eat turkey at the end of November on the day of Thanksgiving. We understood that in his opinion there was no question that turkey did not lack a tradition of kashrut, in case you wondered if turkey was kosher, and that eating it on Thanksgiving was not a problem of imitating Gentile customs. We also heard this was the opinion of his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, that was Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik's father. Others have also recounted that Rabbi Soloveitchik ruled this way and that he found it difficult to comprehend how one could consider Thanksgiving a Gentile holiday, or that it was prohibited to celebrate. Indeed, there were instances when Rabbi Soloveitchik implied to his students that he and his family celebrated Thanksgiving, although class, shiur, was always held on Thanksgiving. My kids actually go to yeshiva here locally. They have school until 1 o'clock. They have they are religious in Hebrew studies to 1 o'clock, and then they get out of school early, and most of the families celebrate it thereafter. A similar view is taken by Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who states that it's clear that Halacha does not consider Thanksgiving to be a religious holiday, and even if you lived in a society where there are some religious denominations that celebrate Thanksgiving religiously, does anybody here know anyone who celebrates Thanksgiving with any kind of religious connotations?
Well, you should say like a Jewish family would bench after.
You would bench. But you're not doing that. You're doing that because you happen to be eating. You would do that for any meal. Right. If you would only do it on Thanksgiving, yes, that would be a good point. Right. I was talking to somebody who said, do we have to have bread? We have to have like 2 loaves of bread at the beginning of our Thanksgiving meal? I said, it's not Shabbos. You could have bread, and that's a nice thing to have bread, but there's no requirement.
I think some churches may have it. Excuse me, an additional mass or something because of the holiday.
Okay, so that might be. And he says that even if you live in a society where there are some religious denominations that celebrate Thanksgiving religiously, that would not be sufficient to make it a religious holiday, as it's clear that many secular people celebrate it. Rabbi Henkin suggests it would be a good thing occasionally to skip the Thanksgiving meal as a way of indicating that this event is not a religious obligation but merely permissive. So if you want to do Thanksgiving like on a Wednesday night, like tonight, or on Friday instead of Thursday, that's what he recommends. Rabbi Soloveitchik did not require that. He seemed to just endorse Thanksgiving the way it is and wasn't concerned about it being, you know, seen as a permanent day on the calendar. Okay, let's take the third and last approach. The third and last approach is the more negative one. Because so far we've gotten a pretty tacit acceptance of Thanksgiving. Rav Moshe Feinstein accepted it in principle, but was concerned about it being fixed and being perhaps seen as a mitzvah, and therefore do what you need to do, vary it. One year, you know, have chicken instead of turkey, or do it on a Friday instead of Thursday. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't seem to find any issue at all. There's no problem, there's no imitating the Gentiles. He didn't, in terms of this, because it's not based on any idolatrous kind of practice or belief. The third approach is different. That's the approach of Rabbi Huttner. Rabbi Huttner was the Rosh Hashiva. He was the head of a very prominent yeshiva referred to as Chaim Berlin, which had its roots in Europe, in pre-war Europe, and then reestablished itself here in the United States. It's in Brooklyn, and it's considered a very, very prominent yeshiva, and he was a great rabbinic personality. An exactly opposite approach to the rulings of Rabbi Feinstein and Soloveitchik appears to have been taken by Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Rabbi Huttner argues that it is obvious and apparent that whatever the merit of celebrating Thanksgiving the first time in the 1600s, the establishment of an annual holiday that is based on the Christian calendar is at the very least closely associated with idol worship and thus prohibited. He says the bottom line is, I don't care what they're doing on this day. It could be the most innocuous thing, but it's instituted not on a Jewish calendar, but on a Christian calendar, which we know is based on idolatrous issues. Okay? Rabbi Huttner argues that such a celebration becomes a, quote, holiday through the creation of an annual observance. And celebrating Gentile holidays is obviously wrong. Rabbi Huttner concludes, and I quote, in truth, one must distance oneself from these types of customs and even from those events that are similar to these types of customs. The truth is simple and obvious. An analogous approach, albeit less certain of a prohibition, is adopted by Menashe Klein, another big rabbi, who also rules that Halacha celebrates prohibits the celebration of Thanksgiving. Rabbi Klein notes that Halacha divides Gentile rituals into two distinctly different categories. first category are those things that Gentiles do out of silliness and irrationality. He's not saying that everything they do is out of silliness. He's saying it doesn't have an idolatrous practice, and it seems weird. The second are those that are done for religious purposes or for purposes of immodesty. Rabbi Klein then cites the Gra, that's the Vilna Gaon we mentioned earlier, who rules that Gentile customs and law that have no Jewish basis should be avoided because they may have an origin in the idolatrous customs of the past. He says, idol worship is such a severe prohibition that even though we don't think it has an idolatrous root, it could. And therefore, be on the safe side. Those who eat fowl is a quote from him as a commandment for the fact, as I've heard it, that they did not have what to eat, and they found this bird, and they were very happy and rejoiced over having found this bird. This appears not to be a Gentile custom. So he says it's not a Gentile custom. Nonetheless, one must examine this to determine if it is, as it states in the Yoredeah 147.6, that's the Shulchan Aruch Code of Jewish Law, a case of one who makes a private holiday and worships many gods on the day that he was born or first shaved, or any similar case. It is possible that Thanksgiving is such a case. Even though they claim that they are worshiping God and not idols, it's possible that there's a mixture here. And thus it's possible that this is a Gentile ritual. Well, basically he's saying, it's possible. It doesn't seem like it is, but it could be. Thus the spirit of the sages did not approve of one who celebrates, and it is possible that there's a biblical violation. Last is very interesting. He says a similar view is expressed by Rav David Cohn, who writes, this is the last paragraph there, quote, the celebration of Thanksgiving is something that has been disputed by many rabbis. Some prohibited and some maintain that it is the derivative prohibition of idol worship, and there are others who completely permit its celebration. In my opinion, to eat turkey for the sake of a holiday is prohibited by the rule of Tosafot in the tractate of Avodah Zarah, that's a tractate of the Talmud called idol worship. It's all about idol worship. 11a, since this is an irrational rule of theirs, and following it is improper. Nevertheless, there's no prohibition for family to get together on a day when people do not go to work and to eat together. And if it is their wish to eat turkey, not for the sake of thanks, but because they like turkey, that is not prohibited. It sounds like Jackie Mason speaking. They're off from work. So what are they going to do? They're going to eat. And they like turkey. So if you happen to be off anyway, it's not like you have to go to work because your boss gave you off.
The turkey wasn't.
So, and then there was a sale on turkey, and you like to eat turkey, as long as you're not doing it because of the holiday, he says. But the spirit of the sages does not approve of such conduct, as they are functioning as if they practice, follow the practice of Gentiles. Let's summarize one little paragraph. In sum, three premier authorities of the previous generation have taken three conflicting views. Right? You've ever heard this expression? Two Jews, three opinions. Right? Rabbi Huttner...
Three opinions.
Right. Rabbi Huttner perceived Thanksgiving as a Gentile holiday and thus prohibited any involvement in the holiday. That's one opinion. That's the extreme opinion. On one side that says, no. Rabbi Soloveitchik is on the other side of the spectrum, who permitted the celebration of Thanksgiving and permitted eating turkey on that day. He ruled Thanksgiving was not a religious holiday. He saw no problem with its celebration. And then you have sort of the middle approach, which is adopted by Rav Feinstein, that he maintained that Thanksgiving was not a religious holiday, but nonetheless thought that there were problems associated with celebrating any secular holiday, and therefore while he appears to have permitted eating turkey on that day, he would discourage any annual celebration that would be festival-like. If you ask me, so what do I do? We got three opinions. So this is why it says in the Ethics of Our Fathers, in Perkei Avot, Aseh Lecha Rav, make for yourself a rabbi. This is very important, by the way. The reason why it's important for you, for any Jew, and for any rabbi also, honestly, because I don't know the answer to all questions, so I go to my rabbis too, is to make yourself a rabbi, because when you ask a question, you may get a different answer depending on who your rabbi is. Years ago, I remember when I was a little kid, they came out with automatic timers on dishwashers. And my mother was thrilled, she should rest in peace, because we always used to dry the dishes by hand on Shabbat evening and not put them in the dishwasher, the ones that we needed for the next day for the Saturday day meal. And she found about this this automatic timer. She called our rabbi in our synagogue, was very studious, very scholarly, also very liberal-minded rabbi, and he felt that it was a problem. And that timers could be used to put lights on and off, but not other things like a dishwasher. My mother Lashon's best friend called her rabbi, also a very well-respected Orthodox rabbi, who ruled that it was permissible for her to use her dishwasher. So my mother started schlepping over dishes. No, I'm just kidding. And the truth is, each one did the right thing because they followed their rabbinic approach. The wrong thing in that instance would have been to adopt a different rabbi's point of view because it was more convenient. Mm-hmm. You can do some forum shopping. You find out this rabbi, and it doesn't take too long to figure this out, that this rabbi has a reputation of being lenient in this area but strict in this area, and this rabbi has a reputation of being strict in this area and lenient in that area, and you just put all the leniencies together of the 10 or 15 different rabbis, but that's obviously not being consistent, and that's not making for yourself a rabbi. And you know, I'm giving, these are light examples. You know, I'm just giving another more serious example that I taught about 2 weeks ago, a class on the issue of the medical ethics class that I taught about the Dicephales twins, the Siamese twins. It was a couple weeks ago, right? 3 weeks ago. Okay, thank you. And this religious couple from Lakewood, New Jersey, 1977, had this terrible, terrible decision to make as to whether or not they should sacrifice the life of one of their twins in order to save the life of the other. And it was clear from the doctor, the head physician, it was actually C. Everest Koop, who became the Surgeon General under the Reagan administration, was a very prominent physician in Philadelphia, who said that both babies are going to die unless you take one life's baby in order to save the other. But how do you know if you can do that? Because according to, I mean, you're basically killing a child. But if you don't do anything, both will die. But what do you do? Now that question they posed to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And without getting into the whole class, he permitted it. He permitted the procedure based on a whole legal analysis. But there were other rabbis that disagreed with him, who either disagreed with the outcome or with his reasoning that led to his permitting this procedure to take place. And therefore, in that case, who your rabbi was could have meant the difference between life and death. So it's not just having turkey or not on Thursday or setting your dishwasher. It can come down to some very serious issues. I celebrate Thanksgiving. I follow the opinion essentially of Rabbi Soloveitchik. If you want to be concerned about perhaps Rav Moshe's issue, Rav Moshe Feinstein's issue, then you can maybe vary something. Celebrate it a little differently. Don't have turkey one time, do it on Thursday, or do it on Friday, or something a little different, so it doesn't have that sense of permanence. But you will find Jewish people in the community not celebrating this all. You'll find people celebrating it, and the truth is, they're all doing what they have either analyzed on their own. If you know enough about these issues and you can write your own article, I'm not saying this facetiously, then you can determine what to do on your own. If you don't know enough, then you can pick up an article like this and get the different views, and then find out what your rabbi does, which view your rabbi seems to follow and therefore feels appropriate is for you. And that would be, I guess, the most consistent and intellectually honest way of following one of these opinions, as opposed to what we normally do, which is, which opinion am I more attracted to emotionally? Which opinion do I agree with more intellectually? Because that is not necessarily based on, that could vary from issue to issue, and then we're really not subordinating ourselves to any kind of legal system, and then we're just sort of picking and choosing what we like. It's not nearly, that's still a level, even if a person would do that, that's still a level because you're at least following some rabbinic position, right? At least you have what to rely on. You're not just saying, well, I think the halacha should be this. These rabbis went to great pains to figure out what exactly they should do or not do. But as I say, the goal really in Judaism and in Jewish law is to be able to get to a point where you can answer your own questions and know enough about Thanksgiving and idolatrous practices to be able to answer the question yourself. Yes?
I've got a number.
Sure.
Yeah. So under Rabbi Huttner's school of thought, he used to have issues with other non-Jewish holidays as well, like 4th of July.
I'm going to mention something very connected to that in a minute about Yom HaTzma'ut, because there's a controversy to this day about celebrating Israeli Independence Day because of a similar issue. I'll get back to that in a second.
What about, say, let's come off on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
And we're off because it's Christmas.
Right.
You know, it's not a choice. Isn't that more,
Yeah, that's more of an issue, but there's no issue. It's not like, oh, I have to go to work on Christmas.
Yeah, but you're not at work for a certain reason. Though.
You're not at work, but you're not doing it to celebrate. You're off from work because they have holidays.
There's nobody to talk to. Groovy
every year.
No, it's like just we're off tomorrow. There's nobody to talk to. There's no market. No.
This is an interesting question.
To talk to.
The question is: by you taking off from work, are you in any way participating in the celebration?
No, but I think if any, I mean you're not, but it's just goes into like a fine detail. To me, that's more like worse than like having Thanksgiving.
Taking off from work?
Yeah.
I would say attending a Christmas meal and sitting around the tree with some eggnog. That's an issue, I think, because you're involved in the. You're off from work because we live in a Christian society, whether we like it or not.
You can go to work if you want.
And you can go to work, but I don't think you need to make a point of going to work on that day, because it's clear to you and to your non-Jewish friends and coworkers that you're not celebrating this holiday. I don't think.
But Rabbi Huttner's logic.
Oh, you're saying according to Rabbi Huttner's logic?
Yeah.
Because why?
Because every December 25th, you're not going to be at work.
Right, but not going to work, I don't think in and of itself is tantamount to any kind of celebration. You're not going to work so you can celebrate. If you go out to a movie and eat Chinese food like a good Jew does every Christmas, then you're not using the day to celebrate Christmas. You're using the day to take a day off. The whole point of being let off from work is to be able to celebrate. It's not just for the sake of being let off. You're right. If being let off in of itself was an expression of Christmas or some other religion.
It's not your personal choice, but you're kind of being
like, yeah, but I don't
intentionally
think.
Took a vacation day off because it's Christmas.
I don't think it's an issue.
But most people, their office
even according to Rob Huttner.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Most people, your office is closed. You can't work even if you wanted to.
Yeah, there are plenty of people who could, though. A lot of people working their own companies, their own things that could simply.
But you can't call clients unless they're Jewish clients, so.
Right. You could. You just get the phone hung up. Yes. Glenn, yeah.
I was wondering the larger communal issues. I mean, clearly, if Jews are seen as people in America here as Americans who aren't celebrating things like Thanksgiving, doesn't it kind of send the message?
Right.
Religions might say, Jewish people don't want to be part of America.
Good. I think that's an excellent consideration, and I think we haven't spoken about this yet, and I'm glad you brought it up. Let's talk about the positive aspects of a Jew celebrating Thanksgiving for a minute, because we've just been talking about what would be problematic about it, okay? We're supposed to have gratitude. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, as I mentioned, was very, very big on that. And we do that every Shabbat, actually. How do we do that at MGE? And virtually every synagogue does this every Saturday. You pray for the government, for the welfare of the state. And that demonstrates that we're not just here, but we are proud of this great country, and we are thankful to this country for the liberty that it's given. And without a question, in our over 2,000 years in the diaspora, we have never had it so good, ever. I don't think anybody can debate that. And I think that therefore there is a certain level of gratitude that is owed. The question is, how do you demonstrate that? You know, Thanksgiving is not the only way of demonstrating that. Volunteering, or maybe on Thanksgiving they're sending, some of the synagogues are having, I really wanted to do this, but we didn't get our act together, to send sort of gift baskets and things like that to the troops in Iraq. To the Marines serving in Iraq or in Afghanistan. There are other ways of demonstrating that. Thanksgiving and celebrating Thanksgiving is probably a good way of doing that too, and I think that is something that we should think about in order to express our thanksgiving to God for this great country. And that's really what Thanksgiving was about. That's what George Washington proclaimed in 1789. Yeah.
I mean, with regards to Washington's, I guess they call it a proclamation, it seems very pluralistic. He's not mentioning any one particular religion. It's not biased towards Christianity. And if anything, he says all the good that was, that is, and that will be, just so the Jewish concept is right. Not so... So in any way, it could even be seen as pro-Jewish.
Yeah, I mean, it's very pro-God, and they are very careful to keep it very general, right. Which is great, which is very accommodating. And this is, you know, this is something that we're very, very proud of, and it's one of the reasons why Jews have thrived here so much. Because there is, on one hand, a certain openness, and plurality, and there's also a sense of a belief in a higher being without dictating to you which belief that is. The problem is when you start getting into some of the details, some of the other holidays, you see that it is particular. It's about Jesus. It's about, you know, this way of worshiping God. But that's really the beauty of this great country, is that it's up to you. Freedom of religion. The biggest challenge we really have is that we have so much of freedom that we don't take it seriously, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We don't take it seriously. There was one practice, though, that... I wanted to get back to one other thing. Yom HaTzma'ut. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, and we get closer to Israeli Independence Day, and this year is Israel's 60th anniversary of the creation of the state. It's going to be a very, very special year. So when Yom HaTzma'ut was declared as a special day of international Jewish celebration, and then later in 67, when Jerusalem was reunited after the Six-Day War, and Yom Yerushalayim was then declared, and there were rabbis that wanted to declare it a special day, a day then we would say Hallel, a day that would also be in the middle of the Sfira period, which goes back 2,000 years, which is a mournful period, where we don't have any music, live music or anything like that. And when Yom HaTzma'ut falls out in the middle of that, we have live music. But there was a certain level of discomfort in parts of the Orthodox community, significant parts of the Orthodox community, because it was adding a day of celebration. It's like creating a holiday. Now, there is a holiday that's about to come up. The rabbis did this too, and it does deal with our past couple of weeks of discussion. What holiday are we about to celebrate?
Hanukkah
and Purim are post-biblical holidays. They were instituted by who? Not by God. There's nothing. By who?
The rabbis.
By the great sages. It's brought down, they're discussed in the Talmud. Okay, and there were... What's that? Rabbi Yudah HaNasi did not decree, he recorded them. These were instituted way before Rabbi Yudah HaNasi. Mordechai and Esther, who were prophets, decreed that there should be a day to celebrate the day that the Jews were supposed to be rounded up by the Persians and destroyed, and instead were saved. Okay, and Hanukkah was instituted after the Jewish community, led by the Hasmoneites, the Hashmonaim. This would be a good segue to next week's class, which we're going to talk about Hanukkah. After they defeated the Greeks and drove the Greeks out of Jerusalem and went into the temple and found it desecrated, and then they lit the menorah and they said that this should be 8 days, because it took 8 days to get the fresh supplies of the menorah, and there was 8 days of rededication of the temple because the Greeks had basically, and they created a holiday. There's been no holiday created since Purim and Hanukkah. And who did it? Who created it? It was created by people, not by God. It's not like Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot, which are biblically mandated. There are verses in Scripture, in the Torah itself. Hanukkah and Purim, but at least we had what? We had a Sanhedrin. We had the Jewish High Court that had the authority to create a day like that. We haven't had one since then. What happened in 1948? Happened in 1948. We know we don't have the authority to do that, but something so spectacular happened. After over 2,000 years of dispersion, the Jewish people came back to Israel and were granted a state. and it was recognized internationally by a majority of the countries of the General Assembly in the United Nations voted in favor of partition. And many rabbis felt that to do nothing. Now, by the way, this was basically, it wasn't instituted by the rabbis, it was instituted by Zionists who were primarily secular and not religious. The question is that the rabbis had, do they endorse this or not? Do they go along with it? And there was a big split. And you should know it's still a split. It's much less of a split today in 2007 than it was back then. But there was a split. There was a religious Zionist camp that felt very gung-ho and that continues to feel very gung-ho. That's the sort of community in which I was raised. That 1948 was the culmination of thousands of years of yearning to come back to Israel and to have our own government, to have our own army. And it's not the Mashiach, it's not the Messiah, but it's something godly still. And therefore we have to say hallel on that day, and we have to do something religious to commemorate it. And we do, but not all parts of the community do this. Because many rabbinic authorities did not want to accept it, as because they didn't feel we had the authority to add a new holiday, or because it was launched not necessarily by the religious establishment. It should therefore cannot be endorsed by the religious establishment. There was all sorts of issues, and it continues to this day. And it all revolves around the same question of adding a day. Are you allowed to add? Are you allowed to just create? And this is, by the way, you should know that Rabbi Soloveitchik, we've been speaking about him, broke with the most prominent Orthodox rabbinic group, which was still around. It was called the Agudat HaRabbanim. This is before the Orthodox Union was formed. The Orthodox Union was around, but he was one of the great rabbis as part of the Aguda, and he broke with the Aguda over this issue because he felt so strongly that what happened in 48 was God's hand in history, and that we need to recognize it religiously. And if not, we're turning on our backs on what God is trying to do to bring us back to Israel. And the fact that it was fought and established by Jews who were secular and not religious, God works in mysterious ways. There are all sorts of answers for things, and it's still an interesting controversy. I just wanted to bring that up. But so it's not a uniquely American thing. It doesn't matter. It could be a Jewish thing too. And I'm sure many of you listening to this are going, huh? Of course it's a religious holiday, it's Israel. But it doesn't matter, because technically, if it's not in the Torah, or you didn't have the authority of the Sanhedrin, or the prophet like Mordechai, or Queen Esther, who was on a very high spiritual level, to create, then what right do you have to create these new days and celebrate them religiously? And we do celebrate Israel religiously. Hallel is a way of celebrating it religiously. We push off the Sfira, the mourning practices of the Sfira period, in order to do this. In other parts of the community, they don't do this. I vehemently disagree, and I think they're missing the boat. And I've had many discussions and arguments, and obviously we have to try to respect each other's perspectives and opinions, but that is the concern of this. And it happened more in 67, because 67 got into the heart of Israel, which is Yerushalayim. And a reunification and of Jerusalem, in the estimation of many great rabbis, really requires something more than just going, oh yeah, today was the day that we reunified Jerusalem. So anyway, it's a big issue that Thanksgiving, I think, sort of brings out. Any other questions about any of this?
Can you celebrate your birthday then?
Can you? Of course you can celebrate your birthday. Why can't you celebrate your birthday?
It's not the same day every year.
It is, but it would actually be better to celebrate which birthday of yours?
The
Hebrew birthday, because it's not based on a Christian calendar. It's not based on, but certainly, you know, there's certainly no issue with that. So I want to take this opportunity to wish each and every one of you and your families a happy Thanksgiving. I assume most of you are going to be celebrating it even after this class. I also wanted to really be, that's what I like about this article. The author is very intellectually honest. He brings down all the opinions, even if they contradict maybe with his own personal opinion. I think it's very important to be aware of everything. If you want to check out, there's more pages here. There's something about Halloween, which is also very, very interesting. Well, I'll tell you where that is. If you want to get some information about Halloween and trick-or-treating.
I think that's controversial on all pages.
Right. Right. It's also Harmless Pastime, Halachic Prohibition. It's on page 10. 10, 11, and 12, and some footnotes on all of this. But take us home. And this is something nice to actually share at your, I was going to say, your Seder. See? You see what happens? It's a slippery slope.
At your Thanksgiving table.
Because I don't know how many of you, I really like this article also because I never really knew the history. I knew there was... They were like some pilgrims with big buckles, and I remember those big buckles from grade school, and Turkey, and Indians, and bows and arrows, and George Washington. You know, it was like a big hodgepodge. Here you have the first couple pages, gives you the history, and then the halakhic analysis. So I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Next week, we'll meet back here, same time, same place. We'll be having a special class on Chanukah, about the holiday itself. What is it about? We're going to go through the story. And I guarantee you this is not the story that you heard in Hebrew school. There's a lot of very interesting things that happened in that period of time. And this Shabbat, of course, we will have beginner services as always. And next Shabbat, I just want to mention, a week from this Saturday, we're going to be having a special guest speaker, Rabbi Joel Zeff, from... very prominent yeshiva in Israel, and he's a great speaker, and he's going to be joining us the entire weekend. There will be a special oneg a week from Friday night.
Next Friday night at 8:30.
In this room.
It's going to be in this room.
An oneg is like we sit around a table, we do some singing, and get to hear from a great personality. It's going to be 8:30, this Friday night.
A little dessert.
Food. A week from Friday night.
Right.
It's going to be the only, if anybody wants to come. Just check the website for all of our other million things. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you all for participating. It's great to have you. You can take it home, or you can give it back, either way. If any of you do not get my Wednesday email where we tell you the topics and what's going on here and stuff, please write it down. We'd love to have you. Please.
I keep putting my email down, and I never get emails.
You put it last week?
I wrote it like 3 or 4 times, I never get it. Can you give it to you personally?
Put it on here, I'll make sure.
I should put it in. I'm getting blocked, maybe
it's getting blocked.
Oh, did I give you the $5? I'm sorry.
Oh, put it here. It's $5 if you can put it in here.
Parsha is 3:30.
The kids
are
not
going
to have
the
dark
they
want.
We were up on 11.
I didn't go all the way back.
So there's a conference room inside the office.
Yeah, I didn't go all the way back.
No, it's right there on the left.
Really bad.
Yeah, actually, I feel bad.
3:30.
Last week was 3:10, but we're
abbreviating.
Yeah, by the way, we love you, brother. I'm so sorry.
I thought,
you have better things to do?
My sister, she came to see me. And actually, she gave birth yesterday. So it was like my last, I saw her twice during 9 months. And it was really like, early. I left lunch, and I left lunch, we didn't have dessert, and it was really,
I'm upset, but I'm not so upset.
No, but I saw Joey, I told him,
Beautiful area. But you have in Turkey?
I think